This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Whitten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
What are scissor grenades? I want one.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio. Now we have maths.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 72 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we talk ourselves into a situation we can't make any sense of and fear that the entire podcast has gone off the rails. Until we realize that we've got this handy-dandy little gizmo in the studio that can rectify anything.
Woohoo!
I am Jay, and with me this week are Keir and Melissa. Keir, how's it going tonight?
Fantastic, sir.
Melissa, how are you doing?
I am fantastic as well. How are you?
Awesome. So this week we are talking about the Sonic Screwdriver, the much loved and forsaken tool of the Doctor. But we're talking about how it has become a more of a magic wand than a tool lately, and all of the things that that brings with it.
Much adored, but at times much maligned.
Yes, yeah, that's that way. Much more eloquent. Thank you. So actually, before we get too far into that, we actually have some feedback about last week's show, about our introducing kids to Doctor Who. There's been a lot of feedback. I know we had one listener tweet us, I believe it was Rohit, that said that that the girl in the fireplace was far too terrifying. And that he actually used Vampires of Venice.
Hmm. So. Yeah, and I called him out on that one. That was one that I was hoping to get a kind of a discussion going with him on that, because you know the concern about Girl in the Fireplace, about having the monsters under the bed, literally. I mean that kind of an approach, and how that's a classic kind of fear for kids. I'm like, well, it's all in kind of what each child finds to be particularly disturbing. Because some kids can just roll with that, and other kids are like, it's the under the bed, that's fine, because I can peek down and I can look and it's nothing there. But the closet has door that closes, and that's a much bigger fear. So it's individualized.
Yeah, and that's actually something that I brought up with him too. I was like, my kid found Vampires of Venice somewhat terrifying because the vampires with the teeth and that it was just creepy for them. And then Girl in the Fireplace, they absolutely loved the clockwork robots. They thought it was fantastic. So it like we said last week, it's one of those you have to know your kid.
C-3PO in a curly wig.
Exactly. Although, I do have to say those masks were kind of creepy.
They were a little creepy, but then again, they love going back to those masks. They use them in all kinds of modern day villains because it's just that blank expression that gives them that extra degree of malice. So
we actually got a voicemail from Tom. So let's listen to that real quick.
Hi guys, this is Tom Thomas calling in. I want to respond to your latest episode of Gallifrey Public Radio, where you talk about all the great episodes to introduce new youngsters to Who. I just want to say that The Rings of Akaton is the best episode to show anybody of any age ever.
Oh,
if you show
God.
Them The Rings of Akaton, they will be a Whovian forever and ever and ever and ever. It's the best episode ever. I love the podcast, guys. Keep it up. I look forward to calling in again. Talk to you later.
All right, Scott is not allowed to have helium ever again. No helium allowed for Scott ever, 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 ever.
Yeah.
He could have at least gotten Junior to call in and read an index card on his behalf.
Stargate Pioneer, we're never going to allow you to defend Akaton without giving you some crap. Doesn't matter how much you try and disguise your voice.
It might help to come up with something better than Thomas. You're a fine boy, Thomas. Get in the cap.
Yeah. This week we are talking the Sonic Screwdriver, as we mentioned. So this has been around, I believe it was the second Doctor was the introduction of it, correct?
Yep, that is correct. First appeared in the episode Fury from the Deep. And at the time it was really used for nothing more than, you know, actually what it was built out of. It was essentially the initial prop was replicated from a penlight. And that's basically all it was. And it was just there to be able to literally turn screws, conduct heat by, you know, extremely, you know, fast moving sound waves to micro, or how you want to refer it, where you're extremely quickly moving an object back and forth to generate heat from friction, and little else. It could deactivate door locks within the first couple of episodes, but that was about it. It was at that point, you know, as they wrote it in the script, it was something that he built on a whim because he was bored and really should have been out, you know, looking for a girlfriend, by his admission.
Nice. Oh, so it's seen some use over the years. I think the only Doctor that really didn't use it was the Sixth Doctor, correct?
Well, it was used by the Sixth Doctor. It was revived because, remember, during the Fifth Doctor, it got to the point where it was being used quite a bit, and even the writers realized that it was being relied on for a bit more than they originally intended. So in the Visitation episode, they destroyed it.
Okay.
And you saw it again with Colin Baker, but then at that point, it was really back to, they were trying to get back to the original, just it's there when it's needed for something practical, because this is not just it's not a get out of jail free card.
Okay.
One of the articles that we have linked in the show notes talks about this, how he has he uses a sonic screwdriver, but they never call it a sonic screwdriver. He calls it a sonic lance. And the article talks about how, like, they're in denial that it's not the sonic screwdriver. It just is one. But he uses the sonic lance to disable a Cyberman, cause an explosion. So
we'll get into this. The list of uses that started picking up, and I'm going to start to chart this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the list and I'm going to cull it down, because it's hundreds of items long, for those of you who cannot see this, what's on my screen right now. Hundreds of items long, but it tends to fall into categories. There are ones that are operational uses, scientific sort of analysis uses, similar to a kind of a tricorder, if you want to jump universes here. Some that have to do with practical uses or, you know, mechanical uses, and some that have to do with, I don't know what category to put these in kind of uses, like holding up giant stone doors.
Or, to jump universes again, it has some uses that Harry Potter would be jealous of.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but what I wanted to do was, because you can sit there and you can track, I left out of this list, I left all of the occurrences within the comic series, in the novel series, in some of the, you know, the more widely publicized fan fiction that has become, or fan created video that's been out there, because you could link those things too if you wanted to. But I left all of those out, and you still ended up with about a 250 to 300 item list of different uses. But I wanted to start to track how frequently or how diversely they were being used as the decades went on, because the curve is exponential.
Yeah.
You know, and it just gets to the point where you're starting to incorporate uses of them that start to, if you take them out of context, you know, while you're watching the episode, you kind of accept it. Something in the back of your head might be saying, really? You're gonna do that? Okay, I can understand, you know, manipulating machines or reprogramming some sort of electronic device, and I get that sort of thing, but I'm lighting a candle, I'm cutting rope.
Yeah. Reattaching barbed wire.
Yeah. So, you know, when you see them written out, it starts to look a little sillier, which is why I wanted to kind of have this discussion, and we'll definitely get to this, about how it goes from being something where, you know, it's an electronic, or I should say a personal computing device that has routines and subroutines, you know, like any other, I don't know, like a universal remote control for your television or something of that sort, mm-hmm. where you can make some modifications to the underlying, you know, software, but, you know, and I'm grabbing this from their own text. They talked about this in the Time of the Doctor. You know, the hardware remains the software persists, the hardware changes. You know, you can put a new case around it. But I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, you know, some of this stuff does make sense. I mean, like, okay, think about the flathead screwdriver you've got in your toolbox right now. What do you use that for? Obviously, turning screws, prying, poking holes and things. I mean, you can use a screwdriver for a lot of things. You know, it may have one dedicated function, but it becomes a multi-purpose tool. I mean, I've used it when my drill was dead. I've used a small screwdriver to drill pilot holes. You know, you take it with a hammer. hammer and you get it. But yeah, so I can understand stretching the sonic screwdriver beyond that. You know, I mean, it is a screwdriver. Turn it into a multi-tool, whatever you want. But I've never reprogrammed my computer with my screwdriver. I've never lit the fire with my screwdriver. You know, there's things that it just doesn't do. There are tools that are designed for that, and this isn't one of them.
He blows up a lot of things. Like going down this list, it's like blowing up a landmine, blowing up the screwdriver.
Get down to the real basics. All right, let's step way back for a second and just look at the underlying initial explanation of what we believe the construct of the sonic screwdriver to be. Sonic, using high frequency, high emittance sound waves as a screwdriver, as it is most often referred to. So it's a functional tool, not a weapon, and that's key. But it is a functional tool that's being used through sound waves. So that does allow you a lot of particular applications, assuming you take your bit of disbelief about where technology currently exists, hang it on a hook. And by the way, thank you. We've got some interesting articles here about the fact that some scientists have, within the last couple of years, been working on the technology that something like a sonic screwdriver would actually be able to facilitate in terms of being able to, you know, use extremely, high emittance sound waves to levitate objects and so forth. So we're getting there.
Yeah.
We're not knocking over stone tablets and holding up giant doors or anything just yet. But
let's take a minute and actually talk about this. The Illinois Wesleyan University, it is working on building a real-world sonic screwdriver. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that is being built today. And I mean, granted, it's huge, it's massive. It's not going to fit in your pocket, and it's not going to make a cool wee doo 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 sound.
Well, that could, but it wouldn't be anything related to what they're actually doing. They would attach a little machine to the side to go wee wee woo.
Just add a button that does that.
So this is something that, you know, can be based on actual science. Yeah. We can look at this and extrapolate, say, okay, take this out 5,000 years with advances in technology that get it down into pocket size. Okay, what can this, the fundamental basics of this technology, what can we plan on that accomplishing?
I don't think we're 5,000 years out.
This is
pretty cool.
Well, yeah, take the rate of advance. Take the approach that says that, you know, as certain things become achievable as far as our technological standing, that means that the next logical step is that much more approachable. So at that rate of return in terms of where we stand, I'd say we're within, you know, if they're starting now to be able to use a desktop size, I mean not desktop meaning desktop computer, I mean like the whole desk, a desktop size unit to be able to levitate and rotate objects. In 2012, when they first developed a working prototype of this, then maybe we're 5,500 years away from having something that's handheld and be equally powerful. You know, it's actually something, and I'll give credit to, though he does a horrible job of masking his voice and calling in about the Rings of Akaten episode, I give Scott credit for coming in on one of his comments when he responded to our discussion about this, was that use the telephone and how it's progressed to the satellite phone and then the cell phone, now the smartphone, you know, has come in such leaps and bounds. You know, what I'm carrying in my pocket right now is more powerful than what I had on my desk 20 years ago by a long shot.
Yeah.
You know, as far as home computing. And by the way, it still makes phone calls. What an amazing function that I didn't realize that.
And I mean, that is a good point because, you know, think about what you've got in your pocket right now and compare it to that old beast that hung on the kitchen wall 20, 25 years ago. You know, you'd get wrapped up in the cord and you'd think that, okay, this makes phone calls and it makes something fun to play in. That's it. Now look at what you've got in your phone. And, you know, looking back, you're not going to think, hey, you know what? I bet at some point this thing with these little 12 buttons that, you know, does absolutely nothing is going to play my video games and I'm going to watch TV shows that I've streamed over the internet, which I don't know what that is yet, but yeah, you know, it's
internet thing gets invented.
It seems as ridiculous as starting a fire with a screwdriver.
Yeah. Well, if you want to go down it, and like I said, if you want to back up to it, and it's something where, at least in the initial iterations, and this is one of Scott's arguments, is the fact that, you know, because we were saying how could it be something that was just a practical tool for a occasional use at its outset, and now it's something that's an end-all, fix-all, get you out of any jam, out of any painted corner, and so forth. Well, isn't that just basically just an advancement of the technology as it goes forward? I understand that argument, you know, saying, okay, you've got something that right now emits high-powered sound waves and turns objects, you know, to turn a screw, to undo a lock, to heat up an object by moving it back and forth in extremely high rates of speed, you know, and that sort of thing. To going from that to, you know, to being able to, you know, open the hatch of a spaceship or dissolve objects from across the room and that sort of thing, you know, or stun someone, you know, like a freaking sonic taser kind of thing. So, okay, if you're going to take us from point A to point B and you're going to say, well, that's a bit of a jump and, you know, technology's going to have to evolve, I can understand that because you've got an entire civilization or the entire breadth of humanity and all of their scientific communities and advancements working towards bringing the telephone from the object on the wall to the supercomputer in your pocket over the course of, 30 years, 40 years. If the doctor is doing this with his screwdriver, over the course of however many centuries you want to give him that he, you know, that he ages over the course of the show, it's still him, though. It's not him going back and saying, well, I checked in with Gallifrey in development and Q handed me this new version of the screwdriver. He doesn't have a Q, right. So...
Yeah, but, I mean, also, these are Time Lords. You know, they have time trouble. They invented gravity, if you want to listen to some episodes. You know, there's all kinds of things that prove that they are far beyond anything that the human race can even begin to contemplate at this point. So to give him credit for coming up with something like that isn't that much of a stretch. I mean... And, you know, you think about all the different things that we've seen him tinker with, like in Blink, his machine that goes ding when there's stuff. And in The Day of the Doctor, you know, his shape-shifting detector that downloads comics from the future. You know, he doesn't know when to stop. So
exactly. But they don't exactly work, right? They're all a little clunky. And that's why I kind of like the fact that when those things came about, it was a separate device. It was him tinkering. Yeah. It's like, him, you know, he'd come out of the lab and say, look what I built. It's this thing. And it does this and this. And by the way, it goes, bing. That was more fun to me than the end-all be-all magic wand, I guess.
Yeah, no, and I completely get that. But what I'm saying, though, is like the idea of him being able to, you know, with the help of the TARDIS computers or whatever the heck he used to cobble this thing together and improve it over, you know, countless centuries. Yeah, I can give him that. I can say, okay, I can suspend my disbelief that far. You know, if I'm already taking it to, you know, nth degree, I can take it to nth degree plus two. Yeah.
But also, it's not just him tinkering that's created it. We've also seen the TARDIS just flat out give him a new sonic screwdriver. What do you guys think of that, Lee?
Well, I mean, if he's already built it and he's got the schematics saved in there, you know, the TARDIS can manufacture one. I mean, why not? It does everything else. You know, it cooks a turkey next to the TARDIS.
Yeah. Just cranks out a new one. But it gets down to the fundamental. We've got two different things we can look at here. We can look at either the practicality of the use or misuse or outright abuse of the idea of having this tool from a writer's perspective. And then there's the whole aspect of whether or not, you know, based on what the Doctor has become in a lot of pop culture as being, you know, this, you know, we call him a Time Lord, but he is really our future wizard, you know, because we're going with that sort of that fantasy aspect. Wizards have their magic wands. They do all sorts of things. You never understand the mind or the capability of the wizard or what we perceive as magic. And, you know, and you go forward with that. Or it's just a matter of, you know, you have to continue to push the envelope because if you don't do so, then it just becomes stagnant and you're writing the same material over and over and just changing the name of the monster.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we've seen science fiction use the magic wand, so to speak, to greater effect. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of episodes of, say, like Star Trek The Next Generation, where Geordi goes off on his 5-minute ramble and you check out after 25 seconds because you're pretty sure that he's speaking English, but you just can't get it. So, yeah, it's at that point you're like, okay, this is science far beyond what I understand. I can understand some of the words, some of the basics, so I can accept the fact that none of it makes sense because they've got something there to base it on. Whereas when we see the sonic screwdriver, a lot of times it comes out of the pocket, it points at something, and magic happens.
Mm-hmm. Step A, step C.
Yeah.
Wait.
I mean, I'm not saying that I want the doctor to, you know, to lecture me on the physics of, you know, rewiring a control panel in the midst of, you know, the whole ship blowing up so that things I don't need that. But mm-hmm. at the same time, it's like you have to have something, you know, some ground rules put in place that you adhere to so that I don't think, wait a minute, that's just not, you can't do that with the, how do you get from the, I just know, you know, and then I sit there with my eyes rolled into the back of my head and I'm drooling on myself.
You get into that loop, the really, 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 really?
Yeah.
You know, and you follow it over the arc of the show, and even, and I'm not just talking classic versus new, I'm just talking within any scope of a couple of seasons, you see that the use or the reuse of the screwdriver kind of ebbs and flows. A lot of it has to do with, and you can tell this sort of a pattern with some of the writers that you see when writers' names reoccur, who tends to be kind of favored towards the use of it, just as a kind of a, as a prop, you know, it's just part of the persona of the doctor. You know, Smith waved the thing around because I mean, obviously, you know, Captain Flappy Hands with everything, and it was very gesticulated. I said gesticulated. Thank you. Let's just make sure we're clear on that. Even if he wasn't using it, he always had it in hand because it was just, you know, it was part of his persona. But you'd find in other writers' hands, just within 11th Doctor usage, where he was whipping it out to make sense of every single thing he came in touch with. He met mm-hmm. somebody new, he sonic'd them. He came up against writing on the wall, he sonic'd them. He heard a strange voice speaking down a hallway, he would sonic, you know, and it became this sort of omnipresent object that lost a little bit of its, and again, this is going back, if you're going to use it as a magic wand, but if you're using it so much, it loses its magic.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, we've kind of seen a progression over New Who. I mean, if you look back at the Ninth Doctor, you know, yes, he used it and he would use it somewhat sparingly. You know, his tool, I'd say, was the psychic paper. Like, that's what Ninth Doctor relied on. He would use the sonic screwdriver when it kind of made sense. Then we had the 10th Doctor, who used it a bit more. You know, it came out a lot more and a lot of times as, you know, as a threatening gesture. But he never actually did anything with it. But then we get to the 11th Doctor and, you know, like you said, it's out every episode and he's using it for everything. You know, he needs to beat his eggs and okay, there's the sonic screwdriver. It's all the time. So we have seen that curve going upwards and I'm waiting for it. Hopefully with the references in the Day of the Doctor, it kind of calls it to attention and says, okay, we've hit the peak. Let's go back down the slide now so that in another, you know, 10, 12 years, we can start climbing back up and we see it used more heavily. But for right now, let's put it away and only bring it out when it absolutely needs to.
Because the War Doctor himself specifically is the one who says it. He's like, it's a tool. Why are you pointing it like that?
What are you going to do? Build cabinets at them?
Exactly. And I'm wondering whether that may be some sort of a bit of a check where they're saying, you know, because a lot of the references and a lot of the fact, the way that they wrote that episode the way they did in being able to tip the hat to the past and give credit to where the future is headed was a kind of an evening out, because you've got Moffat writing as a fan of the, you know, and I'm putting finger quotes, classic years. And by the way, thank you so much for writing in. I appreciate the comment that we got about the fact that, you know, you should question whether you should call Classic Who as classic and New Who as who. And who is who? I'm totally in the same boat with you on that, but we got to play to the people that recognize the distinction right now. So until we can find a new way to categorize it, you know, call that, you know, BE and AE before Eccleston, after Eccleston. I don't know.
I say AP for after Paul and BC for before Chris.
Okay.
So it is dictated.
BRTD. I don't know. But okay. But it's one of those things where maybe even he realizes, because there were a lot of elements in that episode where he was taking classic. It was like sort of looking at the newer episodes through the filter or being seen by the classic fans and saying, what have you done with everything? I don't like it. You know, it was just this interesting kind of seeing both sides of the glass at the zoo. It was the kind of this crazy moment. And I'm wondering whether that may just be an aspect between that and all the news we've heard lately about what's going to be happening with Capaldi and the return to some of the classic roots and classic underpinnings of the show, that maybe this is one of those changes. You know, notice we have not had any in any of the promotional photos or on set photos or anything we've gotten yet. There's been no screwdriver. So none of that stuff. So maybe this is going to become more of a, you know, as needed sort of a thing. Or maybe even he got to the point where he realized, wow, I'm taking a lot of flack from people about using the screwdriver too much. Maybe I should just find a way to be able to tone it back. So I would be pleased if they did. Because it allows us to focus more on...
It's a missed marketing opportunity, though.
Well, yeah. There's the other side of it, is how many more action figures and trinkets can we sell? But no, I mean, it forces you... If you take that out of the writer's hands, it really forces them to be more creative about your, you know, get yourself out of your sticky situations now. It has to.
Well, the only danger I see in that is the similarity to the, you know, some of the RTD episodes where it would be a horrible situation and then without the use of the sonic screwdriver, magic happened and it was all resolved in the last couple of minutes and we're sitting there watching the credits like, wait a minute, what? How did that just... I don't know.
That's just all that does to me is just show me that there are, you know, I should not see the stitches in the fabric. So if you didn't have the sonic and you didn't and you had to rely on some other hokey, you know, get up to get you out of the situation, then you weren't, you know, you were taking like the Stephen King approach and writing a great book until the last two chapters. So, yeah. And by the way, you know, if you're going to attack me about Stephen King, it's Kier at Gallifrey Public Radio, and I will defend my disgust with Stephen King to the nines. Thanks. So, yeah, Kier at GallifreyPublicRadio.com.
All right. So let's take a look at some of the feedback that we've gotten from listeners. The first one we got was a tweet from our closet Brit, Jamie, and she said, it doesn't bother me much, but since it's a show about a time-traveling alien, I've learned to suspend my disbelief a little.
Totally valid.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing about like sitting there watching the Avengers and going through it, and then you get to that spot where Hawkeye just takes that shot without ever checking over his shoulder once. He just takes the shot and takes it, and that's the moment that you have a problem with. Like, you're okay with the flying aircraft carrier and the God of Thunder jumping onto a flying ship and yanking it. You're okay with all of that, but the no-look arrow shot, that's what you're hanging up on. Really?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's we get another... I have to say.
I got up in the theater at that point myself. Got another tweet from a friend of ours, Geeky Paul, who said that the sonic doesn't necessarily need to go away like they did with Davison in The Visitation, but he will admit that it is overused. You know, it's like, you know, it's gotten to the point where if you can't get out of a plot, sonic will fix it. It's a cop out,
yeah,
to a certain degree, and I can agree with that on a lot of instances over the last couple of seasons.
But the reason that it went away at The Visitation was because it was being overused back then. So I think this actually, like, we've been saying, oh, like, more and more, this screwdriver has become like a magic wand. But I think it, like, at one point it really was that, and they stopped, you know, put a stop to that at one point.
None of us are saying that we want the sonic to go away. I mean, like, Kier, how many sonic screwdrivers do you have right now?
Currently, if you want to count Rivers as one, or if you want to, I'm sitting on 9 of them right now.
Okay, you know, jeez.
Because Forbidden Planet has released in UK release just at the end of January. They released what they are calling the additions of the 5th and 8th Doctors. Now you will be hard pressed to find the differences in 5th Doctors versus the 4th and the 8th Doctors versus the 4th. Really. I mean, they really look very, very similar. They changed the colors a little bit, and they're by no means, as far as I can tell, justified from anything having to do with canon. But I bought them anyway because I'm an idiot.
Yeah. So, and I mean, I've got 4 of them in the house. So we love the sonic screwdriver. I mean, I don't want to see it go away. I want it to see it used properly.
Yeah.
That's what we're after here. We're not after get rid of it. It's horrible. It is an awesome tool. It is an awesome plot device sometimes. It is mm-hmm. It's great and we love it and we want more versions of it. But don't use it like, I mean, the one that I keep hanging up on is the Power of Three. You know, when they're on the ship and he just pulls out the sonic screwdriver and he points it at the screen a couple times and then everyone's back to life and the ship blows up and you're sitting there scratching your head like, what the heck just happened?
Because it's in like, the last 5 minutes of the episode. And I agree with you, Jay. That's the worst.
That's the most recent and, you know, biggest offender. So that's the one that comes to mind most readily.
Okay. Because the one that really, at that point where I kind of put the remote down and said, this is getting a little out of control, was the Beast Below with the Star Whale.
Yeah.
And making the Star Whale throw up.
Well, I can almost buy that because, I mean, you get a vibration in the correct spot and it makes you feel all kinds of weird. So
are you going for the brown note defense? Are you really going for the brown note defense?
That's not actually what I was thinking, but, you know.
They've tested this. The brown note is a myth.
I know that. I watch Mythbusters too. But what I'm saying is, like, you know, like, you have those little, like, pocket vibrators or something, like the little back vibrator thing that, you know, if it hits, like, the right spot on your neck or something, you have all these feelings that you just can't, like, it's like, okay, I'm twitching in my left arm and I don't know why now. It's, you know, focused vibrations in a particular spot can have weird effects. So you've got a huge whale and a little sonic screwdriver. I mean, that's about as pinpoint as you can get. So maybe I know I'm completely hand waving right now, but still it's what's going on.
Like, I guess it's just a matter of, you know, if you look at the way that it's been amplified, because even take it down, because you know how I was thinking about categorizing the uses as far as mechanical versus electrical versus, you know, software or that sort of thing. Take the ones that have to do with the mechanical applications, ones that have to work on objects that are, you know, motors and gears and cogs and wheels and so forth. So you're taking something that at times is being used to turn tumblers or screws or bolts, okay, from that mechanical application. Then you get something like closing time, where he points at it and by zapping it for about 7 seconds, fixes a broken elevator.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's the scale of it that I think that might be slipping away from the writers. And it's not necessarily something I'm going to target a writer and say, you know, you're going way out of bounds with this, because the bar has been incrementally raised. So from where they're standing, anything that they write in, well, they've done a hell of a lot more ridiculous crap than what I'm about to write down. So that's after.
Yeah.
Tickety, tickety, tickety. But where do you decide to say, okay, let's back that up? And that's why I had, as Melissa said, I was having really high hopes that when John Hurt stood there and said, "What are you going to build a bunch of cabinets with the thing?" And he actually, you know, he calls you out on it. Does that mean that we get a reset?
Well, and I mean, they kind of broached some of the problem that I had as well when, you know, he starts scanning the door and it's like, okay, it's wood. It's not going to, you're not, and they break it down. He's like, well, if I can focus the resonance of, you know, find the exact resonant harmonic frequencies and whatnot. And they're like, no, that'd take decades. No, it takes centuries. You know, it's okay. So that's why it's impossible. Like, that's, we got why it doesn't work on wood now, which, I mean, that's kind of awesome. But, you know, it did explain, no, this isn't a magic wand. I can't point at the door and boom, it's open. But given enough time, which you just so happen to have because you've got three versions of yourself, and you can do it. You know, so that use of the sonic screwdriver, I was perfectly fine with. Like, had Smith then waved his hand at the door and it disintegrated, I'd have been okay with it because they gave it a backing that made sense.
Okay, I probably still would have said, "Bah!" You know, raise a stink in the theater, but that's all right. But yeah, I mean, it's the, I would probably say, you know, if you're talking about all the uses that really raised an eyebrow, the barfing whale, all right, I'll give you the brown note defense, sort of. But, and I'm going to come back here and I'm just, you know, and you set yourself up for this, you know, Stargate Pioneer and calling in with that crappy voicemail, holding up an immensely heavy stone door with an acoustic lock, you know, by saying that it's got an acoustic lock, sitting there and straining it. All right. The straining was what did it. Because if it was an acoustic lock and you're sitting there and you're sonicking the thing, okay, it's holding the lock open, so the door is remaining open. So why should it be a physical strain? It's getting really hard to hold this door up. Why? What are you doing? You're emitting sound waves. It's like me standing in front of the cat flap and going, "Wheedly whoop, wheedly whoop, wheedly whoop." My throat will get sore, but that's about the extent of my struggle.
Yeah. No, I mean, that one was a clear, let's give him a magic wand kind of feel to it. You know, it didn't make any sense whatsoever. And I mean, I hate to say it, but you can tell that you've got a novice writer, or at least a novice writer to this show. Yeah, it's someone who just says, oh, well, I've seen him use the sonic screwdriver in various instances like this before. So, he's holding up the door.
With a struggle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of that was actually Matt Smith, but still.
Yep.
So let's take a look at some of the specific uses that we've got here and, you know, determine if these are actual, you know, if they could be used, if they're practical purpose, if it's mechanical use, or if it's just complete Hogwarts fodder.
It's got that cod swallop.
Yeah, the land of bollocks.
Cod swallop, Harry. Yeah, so back to the land of bollocks. Yes, okay. I forgot we were going to start using that now. We're making that a thing.
How about the in the Dominators? We've got him using it to cut through a section of wall.
Okay. You're going back to your high frequency sound waves being able to, micro vibrate objects at an extremely high rate of speed. If that's the case, if you're using that as your defense that says that that causes objects like metal objects to superheat so that you can weld things, which it has also done, then I can say, all right, disintegrating stone or what have you. Sure. Okay. I'll give you that one. Maybe.
Okay. So you're saying check practical out. Use or mechanical or?
I would say that is a physical application.
Okay. I guess I can kind of understand that. I mean, if I have seen this one, it's been a very long time. Did they give explanation to that effect, or was it just, here, let me use a lightsaber without a blade and give us a hole here?
Yes. No, there was no disgust. I just let it roll.
Okay. So you've really got to wave the hand there to make it work. So, I'm going to call bollocks.
Welcome to the land of bollocks.
All right, so let's see. To open an electronic lock in the mutes,
opens a lot of lock over the years.
Okay, but there's a big difference between mechanical locks and electric locks. No, I mean this. True. This doesn't say that it shorted it out or anything like that. It just says to open an electronic door.
Right. No, but I think that's going to be okay though, because even from some of the earliest applications of it, mm-hmm. I mean, you were dealing with something that could be applied to electronic objects because you were using, whether it be a matter of the tool having its capacity for both physical application and electrical application. As soon as you do that, you're then at the point where you can start manipulating computer consoles and so forth. And you had that within the first two seasons that you saw it, in all the Trout year.
Okay. Yeah, no, I can get behind this one. I mean, it definitely makes sense to have something like that. I mean, now you can use your cell phone to lock your doors if you've got the electronic locks on there. So it's I can definitely buy this one. Mm-hmm. And this makes sense as a use for me.
And they kept coming back to that. I mean, in terms of when people started asking him what it was, whether you were, all the way up through Eccleston and things, he was saying, oh, it's a, it's a glorified lockpick kind of a descriptor. And there were times, depending on the doc describing it, he would go at it and say, pay no attention to it. All it is just pocket tool. It's the Swiss Army knife for Gallifreyans.
Yeah. All right. So in the Carnival of Monsters, creation of a spark of fire and igniting swamp gas.
Yeah, there's where I start to wonder, because now you're getting beyond something that is physical application, unless you start saying, well, I'm exciting air molecules.
Yeah, creating friction starts a spark.
Yeah, okay, well, if that's the case, then yeah, we're getting into magic wand territory right away.
Yeah, it's definitely, I would say this is borderline being able to hand wave it. And I mean, you've really got to be dedicated to the defense of this one to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, and then we've got some of, let's see, as a conventional screwdriver on a large flathead screw in The Curse of Peladon.
Okay, sure.
I've personally seen actual video of this happening, or something similar to this. So, yes, completely, this is functional, this works. I can get this. Mm-hmm. So
I'm going to advance you into one of the realms, and we're only jumping about two seasons here, so we're still keeping ourselves within the Pertwee years.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking a hypnotic trance.
Okay.
So now here is one of your first applications of I don't want to call it a physical application. This is now a nearly medical or physiological application. And this opens a whole realm that gets later used for things like where it starts becoming a tricorder. You start acting on living objects. So breaking a hypnotic trance, as if you really understand what a hypnotic trance is at a physiological level in the first place. This, by the way, happened in Death of the Daleks.
There might be an argument to be made there somewhere that, it's similar to, a loud noise startling someone that's in a trance like this, hitting the right frequency that just, registers at a certain point that, again, you've really got to be dedicated to defending it.
Yeah. The only thing this is reminding me of is when does it get to the point where he can actually incapacitate people by causing epileptic seizures, like hypnotoad, something wah, 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 wah. I don't know.
All right. So, yeah, let's take another step forward into the fourth Doctor. So sabotaging a two-way radio, a la Genesis of the Daleks.
Okay. Again, you know, physical application. You know, all you got to do is knock one tube loose, mm-hmm. and the radio is useless. I get it.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is definitely one that I can see being used. Yeah. You know, a lot of these are, if it can be done, like, yeah, you know, if it's physical force, I can understand focused enough sonic beam or sonic waves being able to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, it's definitely okay with this one.
Let's take you into some of the eyebrow raising section, though.
Okay.
Take yourself forward to Doomsday, lesser viewed episode, where you're reversing the magnetic field on the Monopticons. So in order to reverse a magnetic field, not an electromagnetic field, because that would be really, in terms of that point, just spin the coils the opposite direction and you've got, you know, reversal of your electromagnetic field. This is just a magnetic field that is issued from, you know, these devices. Now you're starting to say, okay, because it involves electrical components, because it involves one of these invisible things like, you know, magnetic forces or, you know, sound waves and those things I can't see from across the room, stick them all together. Make it work. It'll be fine. Just make sure it happens during a really dramatic moment. Have people talking very fast and it'll all be fine.
Well, this
to me was where it first started to kind of slightly start to rattle on the rails. Didn't come off the rails. the train car just started to wobble.
Okay. Yeah, it's I can definitely see that one kind of that's pushing the boundaries right there. But let's see, what else do we have here? What are some other good examples?
You want to create force fields?
Yeah. Okay. So are we?
Because we're jumping all the way up here. I mean, we're taking it all the way up to. I mean, we saw this Day of the Doctor.
Yeah.
Take two screwdrivers, combine their forces, and all of a sudden it holds a Dalek back by creating a freaking force.
No, it doesn't hold a Dalek back. It stops it dead in its tracks and pushes it back forcefully.
Yeah, throws it back through. Using what? A force field of what? Sound? Is that what it is? Because there's been times where the screwdriver was actually combined with like Sarah Jane's sonic lipstick, mm-hmm. and they used it just to create a high, you know, a high intensity sound wave. But again, you're still dealing, it's just a sound wave.
Yeah.
It's not a force field.
Well, and I mean, what happens if you point two sonic devices at each other? I mean, we kind of saw this in Partners in Crime too, when the doctor gets the, what's her name, sonic pin and points a screwdriver at it and, you know, deafens everyone and shatters the windows.
Mm-hmm. But that I can understand, because that's the effect of sound waves,
yeah.
sonic emissions. Calling that thing a force field, though, tells me now we're getting into, you know, Star Trek territory here, and it's, you know, and it was visibly, you saw the thing. I mean,
well, same thing with and I hate to throw it under the bus again, but Rings of Akatan, you know, with the whispering alien things. I forget what they were called. Yeah, they they start using their force powers on him, and he pulls out a sonic screwdriver and holds them at bay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's again, that is an aspect, that's a whole application of the screwdriver of late that has that I think, and a lot of people call that out. It's not just us, and I know we poo-poo that aspect of it, but that's just because I think that out of all of the applications we've seen, those are the ones that I think to me pull me out of the episode fast, because I'm thinking to myself, you know, just I'm not taking this from a practical science standpoint, and it's not a matter of, you know, Kira, you're not effectively suspending your disbelief or what have you. It's really just a matter of, no, you guys are getting away from what the magic of this really is. I like the idea of using it as a magic wand within the scope of what it is. But when it becomes a fix-all, it's not as magical anymore. It's just, it's an everything, and it's no fun anymore.
Well, and I mean, that's kind of the same thing you see in a lot of fantasy works, too, is when you have a character... if you have a character that can use magic, it's uncommon, it's extremely rare, and it's magical. Here's one person that has this power to do this, or this one small group of people. When everyone can use magic, it loses something. It becomes technology at that point. It's like, oh, hey, yeah, everybody's got an iPhone. You're less important now. Mm-hmm. But if you take that magic and say, okay, there's a cost to using it, or it's unreliable. If you want to, you know, move a cup to the table, okay, you're pretty safe doing that. If you want to destroy a mountain to give yourself a pass to the next town, there's a good chance it's going to go wrong and you're going to destroy your town instead. Like, that makes it interesting, because then it's less reliable and you're not so sure, and people are less want to use it.
Right.
So, yeah, the same kind of thing can be said about the sonic screwdriver. Okay, the doctor's the only one that has it, but we don't see anyone else. We don't see how rare it is. So you have to give it some other kind of debilitating factor. You know,
yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be used for everything, which we've
precisely.
Seen.
Yep. Go back. You're taking one of the core premises of the law of laws of conservation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your energy has to come from something to go to something. There's got to be a cost to your advantages. There mm-hmm. are risk and a reward. So if that's going to be the case, and you're going to keep using, you're going to keep going back to the well on this over and over and over again. If there's nothing that costs you on the other side of it, then it loses its efficacy in that point. I'm gonna thank you. Know, we had another contribution, a tweet from Stacy, and when she actually tipped off, and I should have caught this reference a long time ago. Shame on me for not tipping back into my classic sci-fi on this. Your sci-fi author Arthur Clarke mm-hmm. Said at one point that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Yes.
It's a great quote. You know, you look at, you know, if I were to hand my smartphone to somebody from 1955, they would look at it as this magic device that was just something, you know, out of the pulp fiction, pulp comics that the kids were reading at the Five and Dime.
Yeah.
Because it was just beyond their scope of understanding. Something you hand to us right now that looks like a sonic screwdriver is being used for all the things that we're seeing the sonic screwdriver being used for is absolutely preposterous. And you'd think, God, that it's Harry Potter that we're dealing with at this point. But if we're seeing right now that, you know, we've got these universities that are starting to do the baby steps towards this technology, it doesn't seem so far-fetched. I think the point that we're coming down to is the fact that all those things are based on a technology, you know, because as in, you know, Clark's quote, sufficiently advanced technology that still works within rules. You know, this is an object that's used for physical manipulation. This is an object that's used for remote electronic or computer manipulation or even both if it's, you know, if it's amazing enough. But now we're getting into something that's just jumping all over the place. Physical applications, biological applications, psychological applications in being able to stun species or what have
you. Yeah. I mean, you know, like you said, you know, the taking something back to the 1950s is going to look magic. And, you know, you're right. Everything has to have rules. I mean, the computers they had back in, you know, when they put people on the moon compared to the computers they have now. Yes, the ones that we have now are amazing, but it's still all ones and zeros. It's mm-hmm. still that basic core, this is what it can do. We've done amazing things with those ones and zeros since then, but we haven't created life. We haven't, you know, synthesized food. It's
yep.
all very, you know, there's a lot of rules, and we don't get that anymore in this show. It's, hey, let's try this out. Hey, look at that, it works. It's we don't know where the line is anymore.
Did you, speaking in terms of the episodes we've most recently seen, and I'll ask both of you your take on this, because it was one of those things where when we were seeing the promo shots and whatnot, we first saw the wooden Cybermen, we thought, oh crap, now we've got something, you know, the screwdriver's going to be useless against it because it's wooden, da 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 da. How do they deal with that one? How do they address? Did you understand all of the babble that he spewed out on first pass, or did you have to watch it a few times before you understood how he convinced the Cyberman to turn around and shoot itself?
No, I got what he was saying. Like, I understood. I was like, I mean, granted, at first, I was like, bull. Absolute bull. It doesn't work on wood. This is, and, you know, it took me a minute. Okay, that's what he was getting at. Okay, never mind. But, yeah, it
but
irritated me.
Were you prepared
me.
To say, oh, they, you know, cause you were willing to accept the fact that he suddenly figured out a way how to get the damn thing to work on wood?
Oh, no, I was furious. I was livid when he pulled it out.
What are you doing, flappy hand man?
And
put
the fact
it
that,
down.
And the fact that it was Moffat that was writing it, I literally, as I was sitting there watching it, said, no, you know better than this.
I was waiting for his little kid there, you know, Barnaby or whatever his name, come running while he's having this long exposition and talking to Cyberman. Barnaby comes running up behind him with an axe and just lops his head off. Ah, old school.
Yeah. You want a wooden Cyberman? We can take care of that.
I get to with pointed sticks.
Yeah.
Box of termites.
So what about you, Melissa? How was it when you first saw that? Were you, like, waiting for the point it out?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking the whole time, it doesn't work on wood, this is going to be crazy. And then when it wasn't, I was more focused on my disappointment rather than trying to figure out, like, how he actually did it. You know, and I just accept now, okay, now it can work on wood. Of course he figured it out. Why wouldn't it?
Okay. Oh, I added the wood setting in the 300 years that I've been sitting here.
Right.
It's because I've been playing with all these wooden toys, and I finally figured it out as I was fixing all these rocking chairs and things.
Okay. So maybe we're just too hung up on the way things previously were. I don't know. Apparently I'm a bad fan.
I love it when it gets back to the point of being used for some of the basic stuff. You know, the reminders that it is what it originally intended to be. You know, things like, when he actually like uses it to light his way down a corridor. You know, it's really freaking dark in here. Oh, I've got this torch in my pocket. You know, it's what have you. But those are the little things that are like, oh, okay. You know, they remind themselves every once in a while that, you know, or you look at the different ways in which Tennant would wield it and Smith would wield it. Tennant would kind of flip it around in his hand every once in a while and put it away. And it was one of those things, you know, and Smith would have it out there all the time. And it was like this big dramatic thing, you know, spring loaded some bitch. And it just, you know, it was like with a claw end. I mean, it meant business every time he cracked that thing out. And, all right. Okay. I have to think that with everything that they've now been preparing us for, and I think they have been preparing us, farming us for a very different approach with Capaldi and heading into the next Doctor, that we're either going to see very, very little of it, or it's going to be checked back to brass tacks.
Yeah, I'm hoping that that's what it is it's something that is very rigidly controlled or just not given much screen time at all. You know, it's like we see it used specifically for what it's supposed to be used. I mean, that's the way that things are going. That seems like the kind of Doctor that we're going to be getting with Capaldi is, you know, one that is very focused on, or, you know, very down to business and, you know, almost the polar opposite of what we had with Smith. So it makes sense that he would, you know, he wouldn't use this thing nearly as much. So that's kind of what I'm thinking we're going towards, and that's what I'm counting on.
I have to agree with what you said about how he's the polar opposite of Smith, because to me the Sonic Screwdriver is an extension of the 11th Doctor. It's part of him, not just, you know, like, because 11 just uses it so much. So I think we haven't really seen that from, we're not going to see that from Capaldi either way, because no one is going to use it like Matt Smith does.
I mean, Smith's signature move is pull it out of his pocket, point it at a couple things, and then hold it up in front of his face. What are you looking at? There's no LCD display there. What are you staring at?
True. I mean, and that's, again, it's going to get back to a lot of the aspect of, and we'll get into this when we get into some of the news that we have about what's been developing in the Whovian front over the past week or so. But if we're going back, and a lot of the discussion has been the fact that we're going to be hearkening the Pertwee era, you know, the Action Jackson kind of roll your sleeves up and get scientific and get dirty with this stuff, that it isn't going to rely much on the need for extraneous objects, whether it be the psychic paper, the sonic screwdriver, the smart, you know, the brainy specs, the, you know, or any of these sort of things. Although Capaldi, you know, with a set of brainy specs, would be a pretty damn cool thing.
Oh yeah,
but just the same, it's going to be more of a focus upon the intuition of our primary character. So if we do see it, I think it may be sparingly enough that it recaptures that oh, okay, all right, you know, this is one of those things where when it's used, it's only needed for those couple of things. It's not a plot fixer. It's not scotch tape. It's not, or I should say duct tape in this case. It's just, no, it's
Capaldi's
a mechanism
using it, it'd be scotch tape.
Yeah, exactly. It would be a Scots tape. By the way, can I throw in some stupid trivia here? Do you know why scotch tape is called scotch tape? Can I just share this with you? All right, so when the 3M, I don't know why I know this, but I know this. So the 3M company that developed what we now know as scotch tape cellulose tape or cellular tape, they were trying to come up with something that was going to be used for packing tape, and they gave it to a focus group, and they said, all right, you know, try to use this for your packing and whatever applications you use your tape for. And some of the comments that went back to the developers were complaining about the fact that it wasn't sticky enough, because it was intended to be a much more applicable packing kind of tape. Mm-hmm. And they knew that the company was being run by Scotsman, and they said, tell those cheap Scotch bastards to put more adhesive on the tape. And they thought, that's great, we'll call it Scotch tape. And that's how it stuck.
All right. That's I thought it was going to be like, oh, they just used a tartan design and somebody said, hey, it's look like a Scotch. I don't know.
No, it goes back.
That's
to
better
that
than what I thought.
Yeah. Calling Scotsman cheap. So there you go.
All right.
Hopefully that will come in handy in bar trivia or something one day.
The more you know.
All right. Well, I think that we're all kind of on the same
point here. I have one more thing I want to bring up about the sonic screwdriver, actually. Yeah. So in my research on this, I found that there was an episode, which I have not seen, from 1982 called Kinda, and it was when the companion Nyssa was removed from. So apparently the screwdriver, the doctor sets it to a delta wave to get her to sleep, and somehow the screwdriver doing that causes her to just disappear, and then she's done from the show forever. I don't know if you guys have seen that. Is that an accurate description?
The kind of write-off was a little unusual. Again, that's one of those things where it's the use that will never be used again. There's been instances where they've actually referred to settings on the screwdriver that are never going to be used again because they were unstable. Because as many of the doctor's iterations have said, he tinkers with it. Mm. Specifically, that's the word they use. He tinkers with it. And in doing so, bad things often happen. So the Nyssa write-off with the, actually mistakenly zapping her out of this plane of existence, no. You're never going to see them try to make that kind of an error again, which is really unfortunate because Nyssa deserved a better send-off.
Absolutely.
Than that. I think that was one of the most overt misapplications of the screwdriver. I can even see the putting her to sleep sort of thing, because that's, again, going back to Jay's Brown note defense. Sorry, I'm going to stick, you're saddled with it now. It's a manipulation of the brain or the body by, shaking the hell out of it, for lack of a better term. But this that misuse, where it goes out of control and that sort of thing, just an error on all points, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, that seems never like anything. Completely an anomalous application of the screwdriver.
Yes. Without question.
It still be, but could still be argued to be sonic, so not unscientific, mind you, just different.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, we're all kind of at the same point where it's, we love the sonic screwdriver. We love the uses, we love to see the sonic screwdriver used. We don't like to see the sonic screwdriver misused. And, I think that the simple definition of misuse is not being able to back it up.
Yeah.
True. Or assuming that if it's thrown at you hard and fast, that you won't trip over the hand wave in the writing. We as fans are passionate enough about this material that we want it to be treated with respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think at the points where writers take these kinds of liberties, and by liberties I just mean either the outrageous applications or the applications that don't get enough of, and I'm going to talk, I don't want a diatribe. I don't want a Geordi LaForge explanation of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Right.
But just enough to just say, okay, I can see what hook you're hanging that on, and I'll go with that. I'll walk with you on that. But if you don't even give me that, and you just kind of whip thing out, or what's the explanation? Talk real fast, hope things go well, and take all the credit.
Mm.
Then you're insulting your fan base to a certain degree. So, word to writers, just be mindful of the fact that while we love to be entertained, we are by no means idiots. So we'll call you out on those things when you try to throw us the unfounded uses.
Yeah. Well, and that leads us directly into the fact that we now have actually a couple of the writers pegged for Series 8.
Yeah. It's a good start to the season. Give us the rundown, because I'm pleased about this.
So looking at what we've got here, we actually have Stephen Moffat is going to be writing the first episode, which, I mean, that's normally how he does it. He'll book in the series. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's famous for that. But then we have Phil Ford scripting the second episode that we're going to see. And both of these are going to be directed by, I believe it's Ben Wheatley.
Ben Wheatley.
So, I mean, this is exciting. We're getting stuff nailed down here, which, I mean, it makes sense that they're releasing this since they are filming now. But actually, Ben Wheatley came out and has commented on the fact that Series 8 is going to be darker and more like Classic Who.
Mm-hmm. That goes in step with some discussion that they've had with Capaldi about his mm-hmm. experiences on set now that they're into principal production and those things, and he's echoed the same sentiment. We heard previously from Moffat that he's going to be writing him as more of a gritty or angry, angry. I think there were some very specific words that he had chosen to describe the fact the Doctor's going to be going back to some basics of his persona, and it's going to going to be something that will remind viewers of a bit of the classic Doctors, because it's a matter of less affability. You know, he's not going to be the chummy so much. But this is something where he knows who, and I say he, Moffat knows who he's writing to. And one of the reasons why Capaldi was on such a short list of considered roles, both on the first pass, because remember, he had a shot at being the Doctor going into 11, mm-hmm. we come to find out, and coming around this time again, was because he has some of those connotations that Moff really likes to see, wants to see where he plans on taking the role of the Doctor from this point on. And the reason why he was not cast previously was because, as showrunner, where Stephen wanted to take the character and the series at the time was not ready for what he believed Capaldi was going to bring to the role. Now he thinks that time has come, and he's ready to go that kind of a darker route or some more spite, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is all very exciting news. And the more I hear about it, and I mean, this always happens every time we've got something coming up, but the more excited I'm getting about it,
Without question, yeah. And then if you want to get down into the minutia,
the non-news of the week.
I don't want to pay for your $100 shoes. I want to pay for their $300 shoes.
Yeah, apparently the BBC has come out and corrected itself over the boots that Peter Capaldi was wearing in the promo shot that was released. It was originally stated that he was wearing Doc Marten boots, which, I mean, they're Doc Martens. No, apparently they're made by, what's the name of the company, Kier?
Oh, I can't remember the name of the company. If you trace it back far enough, though, it's the same company that's actually making Doc Martens.
Yeah,
that was the real kicker of it.
It's made by Loake. Yeah, Loake.
They made the same sort of a kerfuffle over the jacket a couple of days prior, because they were talking about the fact that he had this jacket that was a signature cut of made by this one particular company, and the company came forward later and said, no, we didn't supply the BBC with any of these jackets. Maybe it's made out of the material which bears that same name, the fabric that has the same kind of a name. But there were all these sources out there saying that they had been commissioned to send a dozen of them to the BBC in Cardiff and blah blah blah. So heaven forbid the internet give us false information for a couple of days.
Yeah, no.
I mean, all of you cosplayers out there, buy the freaking Doc Martens, because they're the same damn boot.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't walk up to cosplayers and, hey, can you take your shoes off and let me check that? You're wearing Doc Martens. No, false.
Oh, God, there's going to be someone who's like, I can tell that those are real. Those are Doc Martens and not the real Loke.
You're a bad fan. You're a bad fan. Show over. I mean, this is like you said. I mean, it's minutia, and it's almost borderline ridiculous. But for those fans that really do get into absolute correctness, absolute authenticity, this would be kind of big news. But again, like you said, it's made by the same parent company, so really, you'll be fine going either way.
Precisely. And one of the only distinguishing characteristics is the nature of the tab that's at the called the bootstrap, that's up at the back of the heel.
Yeah.
Whether it's squared off or tapered. So if you're walking up to people in their Capaldi cosplay, at your next con, and you'll have to pull up their tight pants.
Exactly.
Pant leg.
Which that's gonna be a task.
Yes. Enjoy that one. That will raise a few eyebrows. So
we're not encouraging this behavior, by the way.
We here at Gallifrey Public Radio do not condone the disrobing of cosplayers.
Not without their express written permission. But if any of you are really getting down to that kind of degree of accuracy and things, then you can also be the person who can contact me about how I can get a functional, practical Troughton second Doctor screwdriver, because I still need that to complete my set. Thank you very much.
And while you're at it, I need the fur coat from the Five Doctors, just for general use. I mean,
complete with the rope to tie around your waist.
Exactly. It wouldn't be complete without that. But yeah, unfortunately, that's all that we've got for this week. The news is, I mean, hopefully it's not slowing down just yet. It's a bit early to be drying up, but.
Now, I think at this point we're going to start to get a little bit more about each episode as the writers and directors are released. Mm-hmm. More on location photos and things like that. We had some information about Jack the Ripper-esque elements about our Victorian London period piece that we're going back to. Did we ever get credited to the actor who was sort of in the Ripper-esque costume that was showing up in a lot of the promo photos? Was he a recognizable talent, or?
I haven't seen anything about it. No, I don't. I'm not sure.
All right. If I find anything more, I'll make sure that I add a post onto GallifreyPokeRadio.com about that, because I've been curious to know where they could possibly go with that story. I mean, that's an iconic. I mean, that's like Guy Fawkes kind of level of iconic representation in the UK. So.
Yeah. Well. But next week we are going to be taking a look at Stephen Moffat in both his roles as writer and showrunner.
Wanting a lot of people chime in on this, especially all you RTD holdouts out there that just are convinced that that was the best thing, you know, since fish fingers custard. Sorry.
best thing prior to fish fingers and custard. Get it right.
Precisely. So that's, we want to get a lot of a lot of listener feedback on this one in particular.
Yeah.
Voicemails. I want to hear people get adamant and foaming at the mouth, angry.
And feel free to use helium voices to disguise yourself if you want. Yeah, but
you know what? Get your kids to call in, because that's more plausible.
I mean, we probably still would have called you out, SP, but it would have taken us a minute longer.
Yeah, because I know what Shooter Jr. sounds like. So.
Oh, anyway, but yeah, send in your feedback. Let us know what you think about this, and let us know what you think about the Sonic Screwdrivers as well. Do you agree with us, or are we completely off base? You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Like Kier said, the voicemail, 210-802-1477.
What's that phone number again? Jay?
That's 210-802-1477.
I should put up my speed dial.
That is for the United States. We are working on getting options for international callers, because I know that we do have a few of you, especially a couple over in the UK that can't make use of this. So in the meantime, send us your feedback to the email or on the comments on the show notes, Twitter, as a lot of you like to do. But there's plenty of ways to get a hold of us, but yeah, give us your thoughts. This is episode 72 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying.
And this is Melissa saying, to quote Matt Smith in the 11th Hour, nothing says non-terrestrial like a sonic screwdriver.
And this is Kier saying, what, you've never been bored? Never had a long night? Never had lots of cabinets to put up?
We'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows by calling 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1477 to leave us a voicemail. You can head to GallifreyPublicRadio.com to leave comments on each episode. There you can also keep up to date on all the latest news and gossip, as well as what's going on in the community. Also make sure to head over to GunnaGeek.com to find out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.
Welcome to episode 72 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Sorry.
Yeah, where we do stuff.
Take two.
I lost my pen.
Blam.
All right. Take two. Click. Welcome to episode 72 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we talk ourselves into a situation we can't make any sense of and fear that the entire podcast has gone off the rails. Until we realize that we've got this handy dandy little gizmo somebody's little icon thing is right there. Kier, that's you. Move your cursor.
I didn't realize that was going to throw you off there, Chief.
I didn't either. All right. Third time's a charm, right?